And then I mentioned Phyllis Greenacre before. They had to test me. She tested me for sexual type things to see if how I responded sexually. She determined that I did not respond well to women because of the experiences with my mother. I hated women touching me, examining me or anything, but it wasn't so bad with men because, obviously the women reminded me of my mother, and Phyllis Greenacre reminded me of my mother, and so I couldn't stand her. And she decided that, and I heard them talking afterwards. They would, I'd be sitting in the room, and they would talk about what they had found, like I wasn't even there. I guess I wasn't supposed to understand the words. You know, I was only 8 years old, so I guess they figured she's not going to know what we're talking about. So they didn't bother to take me out of the room. And she said that I would respond to older men, and I responded quickly to physical stimulation. And they would actually stimulate you in different ways and see what would happen.
You mean sexually?
Yes. Mm-hmm. They actually had machines with wires and tubes coming out of them, and they would insert them inside of you, and then they would stimulate you or something, and it would, they could give you a score how you responded, I guess, in terms of, you know, how much. I know it sounds really weird, but...
So this was all done when you were around 8 years old? Or
I was 8 years old. For a whole year, I was brought back and forth to Tulane, and I was tested for all sorts of things I had to do to see how easily I was hypnotized. And there were several people that tested me for that. One of them was Martin Orne. And I called him the Orne Man. And I just knew that I called him the Weasel. He reminded me of a weasel for some reason. His eyes did, or I don't know. He was very scary, though. And he hypnotized me, and they said that I hypnotized easily and rapidly. They could induce me rapidly, is what they called it. And I think that was the main criteria. You had to have a certain IQ. You had to have an excellent memory. You had to be able to be hypnotized easily and quickly. You had to dissociate. The imaginary friends, who were very pleased to hear about that, that I had imaginary friends inside, that I called the Annies. That's what I called them back then. And you had to respond well to people and be obedient, and I was. I'd always been taught, there wasn't any other way to behave in my life, in my world. If you weren't obedient, you got hurt. My mother had taught me that, so I was very obedient. I always listened to grown-ups and did what they told me, no matter how odd it seemed or how bad it seemed like it would be. Something really bad to do, like take all your clothes off. I didn't argue. I just did it. Because the consequences were bad. So those are the kind of tests.
Now, why do you think those were the factors that they were looking for within you? What did they hope to achieve by doing these things to you, in your opinion?
Looking back now, of course, at the time I had no idea. And even a year later, when I was sent off to a training camp in Maryland, I didn't really understand. But now, looking back, I know that they were looking for someone to use in sexual entrapment, blackmail. That's what they were going to use me for. And they needed someone that responded well to strangers, to men mainly. And um, that had a good memory, because I'd be taught at this camp, I would be taught how to get people, to coerce people into giving a lot of information about themselves, because obviously they're talking to a child, they're doing something sexual that they're not supposed to be doing, and they're not really conscious about what they're talking about. You know, they give away a lot of information about themselves or their job, and if you know the right questions to ask, you can get people to tell just about anything about themselves. And like Uncle Richard used to tell me, it's amazing what people will admit when they're in the presence of a young girl. They're not even thinking about the stuff that they're saying. And then what they would do is, I was sent to this training camp. Well, I was told I passed all the tests, and the next summer I was going to be sent to this camp. And I thought, oh, no, camp. That's bad. But they said this was a really nice camp, and it was in Maryland. And they asked my mother for permission to send me away. And, of course, she signed some papers, and she didn't even ask about it. And I was taken on a train to a place called Deep Creek Lodge in Maryland. It was beautiful. It was all surrounded by water. And it was, to me, it was just, you know, it was Disneyland. Only I didn't know about Disneyland then, but that's what I would compare it to. Because it was great food, and there wasn't any, people didn't hurt you in the same way that I was used to being hurt. They treated you like you were important, like you were special. And I was told that I was going to learn how to sexually please men. I was 9 years old. I didn't know what sexually please men meant, but I just knew that if I was good and behaved myself, that I could stay. I stayed for 3 weeks. It was probably the best 3 weeks of my life to that point. I was paired up with each child. There were other children there, as young as five or 6 years old. There were children younger than myself. And there was young women there, teenagers, all different ages. And there were some boys, too. And the first couple of days, we kind of saw each other. And then after that, you were pretty much alone with one person. You were paired up with an adult. And you stayed with them for 3 weeks in a cabin, like a resort cabin. And I was told later by one of the experts that this place was a CIA training ground and also a place where people could just get away, you know, take vacations. And it was free if you were in the CIA, you know, you could use it any time. And it was also very isolated, and it was on like an island. So it was hard to get to. It was very private. Anyhow, my day consisted of being with this man called Uncle Otto. That's what he told me to call him. And he was a doctor, and he was from Kansas. And I got to choose what name I wanted to use, and I picked Ava, after Ava Gardner, because I love movie stars. And we spent the day going to the pool or just being in the room and playing games that he taught me. Most of the time I didn't have any clothes on. Some of the time he didn't have any clothes on. But after a while you learn just to ignore that kind of stuff. You weren't embarrassed anymore. And it was only one person. It wasn't like you had to be in front of all these strangers with no clothes on. So that was an improvement. They weren't really doing any horrible things where people were screaming, where there was any blood. He, of course, was molesting me, but he didn't actually rape me. So it wasn't physically painful, you know, in that sense. So everything was kind of an improvement over what I was used to. I mean, this was a vacation. And in the evening, we would, about a week there, then Uncle Otto taught me different things to do to sexually please men, just like they said I was going to do. And I thought they were yucky, and I didn't like doing it, but I thought, well, if this is what I have to do to not be hurt, and to be treated nice and to get good food and not starve, because my mother would starve me sometimes when you went to camp. You know, sometimes all you had to eat was worms or something. I mean, that's all they would give you. This was definitely an improvement. And so I thought, if I have to do this yucky stuff, well, then I'm going to do it, you know. And, of course, different shadows or altars would come out and help me so that I didn't have to always do it. After the first week, other people started coming in, other men. And what they would do is put me in a room with them. I'd have to do whatever they wanted. But it wasn't violent, you know, it wasn't, you know, it was mostly just molesting me kind of thing, or I would do something to them. And I knew that it was being filmed. They had showed me about the camera behind the mirror, and I had to get them to talk about themselves. And afterwards, I would go in this room, and there would be the Gottlieb man, the man with the pebble in his shoe, a man named Morgan Hall, who was really Captain White, but he called himself Morgan Hall. Morse Allen, the Morse man. Uncle Otto was there. And sometimes there would be other people there. And they would ask me to describe the person, to repeat everything that he had said to me. Just pretty much to remember everything that I could about the incident. And then they would show the picture, the film they had taken, and see how well I remembered and tell me how, you know, well I did. Or if I forgot something important, they would point it out to me, or something I could have done better, like getting him to talk about his family more.
Did you get the sense that these other men knew about the camera behind the mirror?
Well, yeah, they all knew, because first I would talk about it, and then they would show the film. Well, they had to have taken it with a camera, because it was a film of what happened that day.
But the actual, the men that, the men that you were in the room
no,
with?
No, uh-huh. No, I don't think they did. No.
Did you have an idea?
I don't know who they were.
Uh-huh.
Soldiers, maybe? I don't know. People they flew in, I guess, just to be subjects. I guess they were subjects, too. I don't know. I don't know who they were, but I doubt seriously they knew there was a camera.
So
they didn't
you
act like they knew.
So you believe that the experimentation that was done with you was for purposes for using you in sexual blackmail or entrapment?
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Definitely.
And
As I got a little bit older, I was told that they were going to start using me out in the field. They called it out in the field. And but I had to be a certain age, because they couldn't send a 9-year-old or even a 10-year-old to a hotel room with a man. It would be a little bit too much, I guess. So they had to wait until I got to be more like 12, 13, where they really started using me. And they told me that's what they were doing. They weren't going to get these people on film. Captain White told me, you know, he was in charge of taking the film. And I called him the martini man, because he drank martinis all the time. And they carried a gun. He said he was a policeman at one time. Anyhow, he told me what they were doing was taking pictures of the men with me, because they were doing something they weren't supposed to be doing. And, of course, I knew that. I knew it was wrong. And that they had wives at home and children, and that they wouldn't want their wives to know what they did. They wouldn't want the people they worked for to know that they were talking about the job. And that's why I had to get them to talk about what they did, what kind of stuff they did, describe their family, or ask them about money. I knew that they would, you know, whatever these people were telling me and doing to me was going to be used against them. And when I got a little older, it started to be a lot of politicians, people in the CIA, who I don't know how they didn't know that they were being filmed, because they knew about those projects, but for some reason, because I guess it was a different hotel or a different place, they thought they were getting away with it and that nobody was watching them. So just about everybody filmed eventually.
You're saying that other CIA personnel were filmed with you as well?
Yeah. They got just about everybody on film except Martin Orne. He was the only one that, I guess, that wasn't about to get caught. And he made sure that he never got on film, at least that I know of. They may have gotten him with someone else, but they didn't get him with me.
Did you get a sense of what they were using these films specifically for against these people?
They said it was for money and to keep the projects going. That the most important thing was that the president wanted these projects to keep going, and that they had to get the money because the CIA couldn't afford to pay for it, so other people had to pay for it. And didn't I want to keep helping the president? And of course, I said, yeah. Well, he needs money from these people. And sometimes the people decide that they don't want to give money anymore. So if we have a film and they don't want anyone to know what they did on the film, then they're going to give money. So they pretty much explained to me what they were using it for. And there were doctors and people that had foundations behind their name, so-and-so foundation, and like there was a doctor, there were a lot of people named Charles for some reason, but there was a Dr. Charles Yeshecker or something like that guy, and he had a foundation or something, and he was one of the people that I got filmed with.
The Yeshecker Foundation?
Huh?
The Yeshecker Foundation, was that the name?
Yeah, it started with the G, though.
Okay. Right.
His name was Charles, and he was a doctor. And he was one of those people that had a lot of money, I was told. And
so these people that were filmed were in some ways involved in funding these projects, or were coerced into funding?
Some of them were in this. I think they were afraid that maybe they would talk about the projects, and so they had to use something to keep them quiet. For instance, there was a guy named Church. All I knew was that he would try. He was very important to them because he was going to convince other people to let the projects keep going. And so they had to get something on this guy, Church. And so, and this was when I was later in high school. I was in high school by then. And supposedly he ended up talking other people into letting the projects keep going. He was supposed to be investigating to see if there was anything wrong being done by the CIA. And so he, of course, decided nothing wrong was being done because they had a film of him.
So you got the sense that this man, Church, was a politician in some way?
Yeah. I know some of them were politicians because they had senator in front of their name.
Mm-hmm. Was this Senator Church?
No. Well, I don't know if he was a senator. I just know he was Frank. Frank was his first name. And he was on some committee that was supposed to check, was supposed to be checking on the CIA to see if what they were doing was wrong or illegal or something. And they said he was going to decide in favor of the CIA because they were going to tell him that the film would show up somewhere if he didn't. And so apparently it worked. I don't know. They kept going, so I guess it worked. There was the senator from Louisiana that I was with a couple of times, and he was kind of old. But apparently he was on one of the committees that was checking up on the CIA. They were always being checked on. That's what they told me, that people were always trying to find something bad about them to stop with the projects and to shut them down. And so they had to keep going. And if it meant hurting a few people, well, then that's what they had to do.
Did you have a sense of how often you were used for this kind of entrapment and coercion?
Well, there were certain years that I was used a lot. When I was 13 and 14, I'd say at least a couple of times a month. There were times when they would have me for 2 or 3 weeks, and, you know, I'd go every day someplace. Or they would take me out of town someplace. I would go in these little planes and go to different military bases. Sometimes there were houses. I went to Texas a lot. I went to Maryland a lot. And let's see, it was a lot during the year 63 and 64. And then right before I graduated, 66, 67, they used me a lot. And then in 72, when I was getting ready to graduate from college, they got a hold of me a couple of times for several weeks. And it was pretty much, I could expect it every August, because a lot of people would come to New Orleans in August and May for some convention or something. There would always be a lot of doctors in town. And I knew I was going to have to go someplace. But I didn't know in between, because obviously I would forget. They would always make sure that I forgot before they sent me home. They had to do that, because obviously I couldn't go home remembering that I had just been with Senator Long or somebody like that. You know, they had to make sure that I had amnesia. So they gave me amnesia barriers or whatever, you know, in between.
And how would they do that?
Shock treatments.
Electricity?
Electricity, yeah. That causes some amnesia for recent events. So I would have to go back to Tulane and go in this, like a chair that looked like a dentist chair, and they had figured out just how much electricity it took to cause my amnesia and to make it last. And there was a man from Canada that spoke with a funny accent and always called me Lassie. And I always thought, why is he calling me a dog? I thought he was calling me Lassie the dog, you know, the collie. But he was the one who came and figured out how much electricity it would take. And then he was kind of an expert on it or something, I don't know.
Do you remember this person's name?
I called him the cameraman, because his last name sounded like cameraman. And he was good friends with one of the dull men, the dullest men. I called him the dull men. There were two of them. And he was good friends with one of them because he was a doctor and he had saved the other man's son or something. I don't know. But it was a story like he was a hero to this dull man because he saved his son from something. And they even named an institute after. He worked for an institute or something that was named after one of the dull men. It was one that I never met but heard about. And then I knew that the one called John, the dull man called John, but I didn't know that his brother. I just heard about him. And I guess it was Dulles.
Yeah, that would have been John Foster Dulles.
There was a lot of people that I never really heard the real name, but after a while, you know, and the people who researched all this and, you know, would say, well, obviously you're talking about, you know, John Dulles. Or I'd say, well, who's that? You know, because I've never been very big on, I've always stayed away from anything having to do with politics, watching the news. I've always had an aversion to that, and I never knew why until now. But now I know. So I made a point of not knowing anything about politics or politicians, and so these names meant nothing to me. until people would tell me who they were.
Did you remember the actual name of the person you're describing as the cameraman?
I was told after I described what he looked like and that his last name sounded like cameraman and that he talked with an accent, that he was Ewan Cameron, Dr. Ewan Cameron from Canada.
And what was Dr. Cameron specifically involved in?
Electricity.
Just the electricity?
With me, yeah. They brought him to New Orleans, to Tulane, to give me shock treatments and to figure out exactly how much they needed and how many times they needed to give it to me to make me forget until, you know, the next time. And so he gave me different amounts of shock, different times, and I think I was there for several days, maybe 3 or 4 days, and the first time I met him, and I guess I was just, I wasn't even a teenager yet, you know, I was like 10 or 11, and he also did something else. He would make messages on tape, and at night when you slept, you had to listen to these messages, and I guess they used him because of his voice or something, because he had a really interesting voice that made you want to listen.
So it would be his voice?
Things over and over again.
It would be his voice on the tapes that were used?
Mm-hmm. They'd have other people on tape too, but I remember during this time when they were doing the electricity, at night they would give me what they called a sleep cocktail, would make you very sleepy, put you in a dark room, put these earphones on you, and then they had something on you attached to your toes and to maybe one finger, these little, like, clothespin, it felt like. And so you go to sleep listening to this tape that was going on and his messages, and then if you fell asleep, something would wake you up, and it would be the things that were attached to you, your toes and your hand, and I guess it was a little jolt of electricity or something to wake you up, and it would keep you from sleeping at all. You couldn't sleep the whole night. You had to listen constantly.
And how long would this go on for?
3 or 4 days, 3 or 4 nights.
Continuous? You were not allowed to sleep during those 3 or 4 days?
Mm-mm. Nope.
And do you have memories of what the messages were that were being used?
Mm-hmm. It always started with Crystal. They'd always start with your mother abandoned you. She didn't want you. That I was bad. That I enjoyed doing these perverted things. That type of thing.
You have been listening to an interview with Claudia Mullen, a survivor of U.S. government mind control. She has given testimony at the U.S. presidential hearings on human radiation experiments in 1995. Her accounts include being experimented on starting when she was 8 years old at Tulane University in New Orleans, and subsequently being used as a mind-control slave to sexually entrap prominent politicians and officials to blackmail them, such as Senator Frank Church, who headed the Church Committee hearings into CIA wrongdoings, as we've heard in today's interview. We've also heard her accounts of how Dr. Ewan Cameron was responsible for electroshocking her so she would forget the weekends of experimentation and the sexual blackmail situations. Stay tuned next week for part 3 of this interview. Also, tune in to Monday nights at 10 p.m. for rebroadcasts of previous shows in this series on mind control on the International Connection 88.1.